I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. For more than 50 years, retired Air Force Colonel Joe Kittinger has held the records for the highest, fastest, and longest parachute jump. Now renowned skydiver Felix Baumgartner wants to break those records. Kittinger is a longtime Orlando resident, and coming up, he talks about his role in preparing Baumgartner's mission and also how it hopes to improve the future of space travelers. Plus, when Jeb Bush talks, Floridians listen. We'll try to find out why. That's ahead on Intersection.
In 1960, Colonel Joe Kittinger flew a balloon 19 miles up into the sky, really to the edge of space. He said a prayer and jumped. And as he fell, he reached speeds of more than 600 miles an hour and ended up setting records for the longest, highest, and fastest free fall. Those records remain unbroken, but that could change soon. Joe Kittinger is now a retired Air Force colonel living in the Orlando area and an advisor on a mission by renowned skydiver Felix Baumgartner to jump from an even higher altitude, more than 120,000 feet. Baumgartner would fall faster than the speed of sound making that jump, and in the process shatter several of those records held by Joe Kittinger. Well, Joe is an advisor on this project. He's here to talk to us about it. And Colonel Kittinger, it's great to have you back on Intersection.
Well, I'm delighted to be invited to come back.
So talk to us about this mission. It's called Stratos, and there's already been one successful test jump. That was earlier this year, and a second test jump from 90,000 feet scheduled for later this month. It's going to be done by fearless Felix Baumgartner, who plans to make the big jump in August or September, depending on weather. So you're getting ready for that big, big jump by having this test jump at the end of the month. Both of these are going to take place in New Mexico. So what is your role as advisor for these missions?
Well, I've been working on this program for 4 years. And I'm an engineer, I'm an advisor, I'm a mentor for Felix. I'm the communicator with him during the jump, during the flight going up. So I have multi roles in the project. And it's been a real challenge for me to work on this program, and it's been a lot of fun.
So you're the only individual, though, who has achieved the records that Felix is trying to break. So what are the types of insights that you're able to provide, given your unique position?
Well, I help design the capsule he's going up in. I work on the pressure suit he's going up in. You know, I've been there. I know the challenge. I know the problems. I know the mechanics that it takes to do it. And I share this with the project. And I'm constantly being consulted on a variety of different subjects, from balloons to parachutes to communication to physiological monitoring to all of the different aspects of the project I get involved in because of my prior experience and my knowledge. And I was a test pilot, and I know how to conduct research programs, test programs like this. So I'm an ideal person to be on the project.
So what's the training like for Baumgartner, and how is it different from when you made your own record-setting Air Force jumps in the 1960s?
There's not much difference. I was 10 years younger than he is. I was 32 when I did that. He jumped. He's 30. He's 43. But he's an athlete. He's a professional athlete, has been a professional athlete working with Red Bull for over 20 years. He trains frequently, just like I did. He in the altitude chambers, just like I did. There's a corollary between what I did, what he's doing, because it worked for me, and I know it'll work for him. So, the path that to get there is very similar to what I went through. The big difference in 52 years has been the advancement of the pressure suits. Pressure suits are much more sophisticated now. The pressure suits are much better designed. 52 years has made a lot of improvements in that. And of course, the photography, the cameras, the physiological monitoring, all the different areas that were used on the project have advanced in 52 years. The only thing that hasn't changed is the hostile area of space. Where he's going, where I went, was very hostile. And without the protection of a pressure suit, you cannot live. It's extremely cold. It's just a very hostile environment. Now, that has not changed. It's just as dangerous for Felix as it was for me. But he's going even higher than I went, so there's still some unknowns because he's going 5 miles higher than what I went, 4 miles higher than I went.
How much of a difference does it make going up those 5 miles higher in terms of the unknowns and the dangers presented by the jump?
Well, it's closer to space. It's closer to vacuum. When I at 102,800 feet, there was about 5 millibars of pressure. Where he's going to be, there's 2 millibars of pressure. So he's going to go faster than I went because the wind resistance is less, the pressure is less. So he's going to go faster. And as a matter of fact, he will reach supersonic speeds after he jumps. About 30 seconds after he jumps, he'll reach supersonic speeds, which will be at about 104,000, 105,000 feet. And he'll stay supersonic till about 90,000 feet, where he'll then go subsonic and fall the rest of the distance at a subsonic speed. So he's going to go faster. It's going to be a longer free fall, and it's going to be that unknown that he's going to be facing.
Now, when you made your jump, you came very close, though, to the speed of sound yourself.
I did. I was 9/10 of the speed of sound. I was very close, but I wasn't there. But he'll be there, and it's very important. He has to jump head down. He has to have the absolute minimum amount of drag in order to go supersonic. It's not a slam dunk proposition that he will go supersonic. He has to have absolutely the perfect body position in order to get supersonic.
So we should make it clear that it is one of the goals to break the sound barrier with the human body of this jump.
It is. That's one of the goals. But there's a scientific purpose for it. This pressure suit that he's using is state of the art. It's the next generation of full pressure suits. So he's going to be testing this in the hostile regions of space, and future astronauts will use the knowledge that we gained on this program.
What are the effects on the body of traveling at those very high speeds? We know that there's tremendous stresses on airplanes, for example, when they get very close to supersonic and eventually break that sound barrier. And early in the jet age, it sent planes spiraling out of control. What's the effect on the human body?
Well, we feel that he can do it without too many problems. The main reason is because the air is so thin up there that he's going very fast, but there's not very much dynamic pressure on the body. He will not make a boom. He will go supersonic rather quickly, and we've had him in we had wind tunnel runs made. We have aeronautical aerodynamicists that have looked at this, and everyone agrees that he'll be able to do it without any serious problem.
Would it be possible for a human body to break the sound barrier at lower altitudes?
It would be, but it'd be much more difficult because of the density of the air. Very more difficult. But when you're up there near space, it's a different environment. So we'll learn an awful lot by his jump.
Are there, for example, tremendous temperatures that will be put on Mr. Baumgartner as he's falling through the atmosphere because of the speeds he's reaching?
No. No, that you don't get the heat index as you get up above Mach 2, and he'll be at Mach 1. As a matter of fact, the problem is it's extremely cold. It's 90 degrees below zero. So the heat is not involved at all. It's strictly cold temperatures.
We're speaking with retired Air Force Colonel Joe Kittinger. He holds numerous records for high-altitude jumps that he made with the Air Force in the 1960s. He's an advisor for the Red Bull Stratus project, which Felix Baumgartner is trying to make a jump from 120,000 feet up to shatter the records that Joe Kittinger has held for more than five decades. Colonel Kittinger, talk to me about the preparation for the body for just getting ready to do this. You have to be in top physical form, but is there any kind of particular physical preparation that you have to do?
No, you just have to be in very good shape. He rides a bicycle all the time. He runs all the time. He does exercises. He lifts weights. He is a professional athlete.
Now, you were approached by numerous people who've been trying to set various records, and you decided to go with the Red Bull Stratus project. What made you think that they were more legit, maybe likely to succeed than some of those other efforts?
Well, for the last 52 years, I've been getting phone calls and faxes and emails from all over the world. People wanted to beat my record.
People have had this idea.
For the last 52 years, I'd get one a month, some more than that, from people who wanted to break the record. The common denominator was that none of them had any idea of what the challenge was. They just wanted to break the record. It takes an elaborate team of people to get it done. It takes a partner like Red Bull that is capable of financing the effort. It takes a professional team of people working together to make it happen. So I wasn't interested until Red Bull came along, and their approach, their support, their concern about safety is what convinced me that this was a reputable organization to work for this goal. And, you know, records are meant to be broken. And I'm looking forward to helping him because we need that knowledge. We need that demonstration of the next generation full pressure suit.
So no sense of concern that somebody else might finally take the mantle from you?
Oh, no, I have no concern over that, and I'm doing all I can do to help him.
You mentioned that there's been a lot of changes in the pressure suits, and that obviously is a key component to making this a success. What exactly has changed?
Well, 52 years of engineering, 52 years of walking on the moon, 52 years of going out in space and working, and all of these efforts in space have resulted in an improvement in the pressure suit. It's much more durable, it's much more safe, it's more sophisticated, more articulation in it. So there's been a lot of improvements that make it a much better device to protect a man or a woman in a space environment.
And when you were doing some of your own high-altitude work, you actually had suits fail on you occasionally and affect you really quite physically.
Well, I had a pressure suit glove fail, but that really it was just an inconvenience. But I used a pressure suit that the Air Force was using at that time. Pilots were using that same suit that I used. I had confidence in it, and I bet my life on it. And it was a very good pressure suit. But it was a completely different type of pressure suit than we have today. I compare it to a Model T Ford to a 2020 Ferrari. I was jumping in a Model T Ford, and Felix is jumping in a 2020 Ferrari. So there's a big difference in the development that has happened over pressure suits in the last 52 years.
You're so gracious. I know you've told this story many times, but for our listeners who don't know, tell us what actually, though, happens to your hand when that glove fails.
Well, on my third jump, the pressure suit starts inflating at 40,000 feet. As a matter of fact, the pressure suit keeps the body at 40,000 feet. Even when you're in a vacuum, the body's at 40,000 feet. And on the way up, I discovered that the pressure suit glove, my right hand, was not working. I also knew if I told the people on the ground, they'd make me abort, because no one had ever been in a space without a hand or a foot pressurized. But I felt that I'd take the chance, and so I didn't tell the people on the ground. And my hand swelled up to about twice its size. I couldn't use it, but I could do everything with my left hand. And when I got back down the ground after a couple hours, my hand was back to normal, and I didn't suffer any ill effects from it. So the decision that I made was correct, because I made the jump and I didn't have any permanent problems with my hand.
Now, you mentioned also when Felix Baumgartner is making his ascent in the Stratos capsule, you're the only voice that's talking to him. Why is it important, first of all, to have someone in communication? And also, what do you have to bring to that conversation as the sole voice in contact with him?
Well, you got to remember that we've been training on this program for 4 years. We've been in altitude chambers. And during those tests, I was always talking with Felix. I developed a checklist, and he and I have worked together on the systems for 4 years. When it comes time to get to jump, you have to imagine that the spacecraft is pressurized. It has an atmosphere around him that's protecting him rather than the pressure suit. When we get ready to jump, we have to dump the pressure in the capsule. And in that case, then the pressure suit inflates and protects him. Well, the checklist is over 40 items that he and I go through. And I say item one, and I tell him, and he says, okay, and then item two. And we've done this hundreds of times. So we have a rapport between the two of us. We know exactly what we're doing. It's just routine for us because we practice so long. And he feels comfortable with me talking to him. And I'm delighted to have that role because I know what he's feeling. I know what he's going through. And he knows that also. He knows that there's no one on the ground that knows as more than I know about what he's going through. And so he appreciates the fact that I'm there to talk to him. And so I'll be in communication with him until he jumps.
Is it all business, or is there any room for humor?
No, it's serious business. We're talking about systems that, if it weren't operated properly, could kill him. So it's a very serious business. It's test flight. You know, when you test fly in airplanes, as the experimental test pilot, you have a certain ritual you have to go through. You have certain data that you're looking for. And it's serious business. You have to stay concentrated on the problem. You have to keep concentrated on the checklist. And it's a very serious, methodical process that we go through.
Now, you mentioned his capsule is pressurized. It's correct that your gondola, when you went up in the 60s, was not.
No, it was an unpressurized, just an aluminum basket. That was very simple to operate, but I was out in the atmosphere the whole time, whereas Felix was going up in a spacecraft. He's going up in that 2020 Ferrari that I was telling you about. It's a pressurized spacecraft that has all of the niceties to keep him comfortable during the time he's at altitude.
Is it more for comfort, or is there a safety aspect to it as well?
Both. If something would happen to the pressure suit, he's in a pressurized capsule, we could bring him down. If something happened to me in an open basket, there was nothing I could have done. But times have changed. We've learned. We've gotten more sophisticated, and his capsule he have is a result of 52 years of improvements in spacecraft.
What's the data that's going to be obtained by Felix Baumgartner making this jump?
Well, he's going to demonstrate that this new generation pressure suit is going to work. He also has physiological data, heart rate and respiratory rate and other body functions that are being cataloged during his jump. So we'll have a history of what happened to his body when he was supersonic. We'll have three accelerometers, XYZ accelerometers, that will measure the forces on the body. So there's a lot of information we're going to learn physiologically. And aerodynamically from his jump.
Some of that, though, surely you must be able to obtain without sending a man up there. Why is it essential, you think, to have a human actually do it?
Well, you can do all you can, the testing, go into altitude chamber. You can do all on the wind tunnel test. You can do all the theoretical. But the real proof is to do it with a man to do it. And that's why we're doing it. That's why we do things. That's why we go deeper in the ocean, faster on land, higher. That's human nature. We want to extend our horizons, we want to extend our limits, and the way you do it is to push the envelope, and that's what Felix is doing. He's pushing the envelope on altitude.
Who's going to be using this next generation of pressure suit once it's been tested?
Well, we hope that we'll eventually get back into space business. You know, I think our real challenge is to go to Mars. To me, that would be the most wonderful challenge we could ever have, is to go to Mars. And when we get to that stage, we're going to be needing the best pressure suit we can get. And this pressure suit that Felix is using is an improvement over past pressure suits. So for sure in the future, they will use this data that we're gathering on this jump that Felix is making.
Would you say, is it better than what NASA's got on the market right now?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's better than any NASA suit that they have. Much better.
So let me ask you this. Well, how come NASA's not using it then?
Well, NASA's just about gotten out of the space business. Private industry is getting more and more involved in research. Richard Branson, the SpaceX program, sending unmanned rockets up to the space shuttle, to the International Space Vehicle. There's more and more private industry getting involved in research of space. And Red Bull is one of these organizations that's getting involved in the research of space. And really, I think it's a good thing when you think about it. NASA was a tremendous bureaucracy. It cost tremendous amounts of money for them to do anything. And today, private industry can do it a lot cheaper than what NASA did, if nothing else, just a bureaucracy that they developed into. So I think it's wonderful that private industry is getting involved in space research. It's a win-win situation for science and for the nation.
Tell me a little bit about Felix Baumgartner, who's making this jump. He's Austrian. He's known as a skydiver. He holds records already for a lot of jumps. What's he like?
He's a very nice guy. As you pointed out, he's a professional athlete. A couple of years ago, he flew a wing from England to France. He jumped out at over 30,000 feet and glided across the English Channel and opened his parachute. He's also a base jumper. He's made 150 base jumps. So he's a trained professional athlete. And he's very dedicated to this project. He's very mission-oriented, and he's detail-oriented. He makes certain that everything he's comfortable with it, and he's very demanding. And we like that because, you know, it's his life that is in jeopardy. So he wants to make certain he's comfortable with how we're doing it.
So you've got a second test jump slated for the end of this month. Of course, you're dependent on the weather. What kind of conditions are you looking for to make sure it's a go?
Well, it takes perfect conditions for the weather. The balloon that we're flying weighs over 2,000 pounds. It's very fragile when it's on the ground. So it takes perfect wind conditions on the ground, calm winds, not too high winds at altitude. So the weatherman is one that dictates exactly if we go or don't go. But it's a very tense decision that has to be made. And once they start putting the helium in the balloon, then we're committed to going at that time. The countdown starts at midnight, and we launch 7 hours later. So for 7 hours, there's constant actions and checklists and people moving equipment and inflating the balloon. There's a tremendous circus going on, getting everything prepared for the takeoff, for the jump.
You know, it sounds very similar to a rocket launch for NASA or something along those lines.
It is that, and it's just as tense, just as exciting, and everybody works just as professionally as NASA did for their space flights. Everybody has his job. Everybody has his checklist. Everybody has his pride to make certain that they're going to do everything perfect. And we're very close because we all know, Felix, we've worked for 4 years on this project, so it's a very close family of people working together, and there's over 150 people there at the launch site. There's a tremendous amount of people working together to get the balloon off the ground and Felix back to Earth safely.
You know, it's really heartening to hear your enthusiasm for this project, and I've seen interviews with you, and you just light up and are so excited to talk about this stuff. What keeps you going on this? I mean, you've been at this for many years, for decades, and you've got the excitement and vitality of someone who you might associate much younger.
Well, it's a challenge, and I love challenges. It's an opportunity to contribute, and I like to contribute. So I'm really excited about the project because I've had an opportunity to assist, to help reach the goals that they're all working for. And my next challenge is after this jump, I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'll be out there looking for another challenge.
You're not tired.
I'm not tired. I'm excited because I love challenges and I like research.
Well, Joe Kittinger, we wish you the best of luck and good weather to you when you get ready for that jump at the end of the month.
Well, thank you, and I hope you'll all follow the jump.
I've been speaking with Joe Kittinger. He's a legend of aviation and space research who holds records for the highest, longest, fastest parachute jumps ever. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Joe Kittinger's work with Red Bull Stratus by visiting WMFE.org/intersection. Coming up on Intersection, when Jeb Bush makes an address, lots of people listen in. We sent 90.7's Matthew Petty out to the field to try to find out why. In Florida politics, there's one name that dominates, Jeb Bush. He doesn't hold any office. He's not running for any office. But any major issue that crops up in Florida, people want to know what the former Florida governor thinks. This week, Jeb Bush addressed a gathering of education officials, business leaders, and Bush has been active in education circles for years, promoting new education policies and standardized testing. But besides that, why are we so interested in what Jeb Bush thinks? Well, to try and answer that question, we sent 90.7's Matthew Petty to find out. So, Matt, where did you go to track down Governor Bush, and what were people saying?
Well, Mark, as you said, the governor did speak at a conference for teachers and business leaders at a Disney Resort hotel. The conference, sponsored by GE's philanthropic arm, focuses on the new nationwide K-12 standards. These are being brought in for English, math, and science. Now, he talked first with teachers and educators, and then he talked to business groups about the need for these common standards to get broad support. Some teachers did question the need for so much testing. He got some probing questions on that. He said that, you know, basically he thinks that the testing is good and it's necessary.
So that's what the teachers were thinking. And obviously, Bush has been involved with education reform for a long time. But what about on the business side of things?
Well, after his second speech, Mark asked some of the business people why there's so much interest in what he has to say, even though, as he said, he's no longer governor of Florida. Now, here's Ann Kramer of IBM.
I love the fact that as a former governor, he is equally as passionate about education and the understanding of how critical it is to, as he was saying, selling his fine state of Florida, because the link for the educated citizens is the link to economic success.
Now, as you well know, Jeb Bush does have good name recognition outside of Florida. Of course, it's partly due to his family, his father and brother, both presidents, but also because of his reputation as something of an expert on education reform. So he does seem to be one of these people who is able to bridge the partisan divide, something that's obviously of great concern to people and people see as a drawback to politics in the United States at the moment. Now, Kelly Wells from the GE Foundation says that's why people do want to hear what he has to say.
I think that they respect his opinion and really look at it because he's coming at it from an angle to say, this is not about politics. This is about making our country great, having equity and access for all children, and really promoting an education agenda.
You know, that's interesting because there is this idea about Governor Bush as kind of a post-political figure. He's not in office. He's not running for this office. But, you know, he's still heavily involved in politics. He's been advising the U.S. Department of Education, U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, and talking with the Obama administration about some of that.
That's an interesting point. And that's actually something he brought up in his speech to the educators, that group of 400-odd educators and teachers. And he got a round of applause, in fact, for saying that he was proud to introduce the president, President Obama, when he came and spoke at a school in Miami last year. And he said he was proud to introduce him because he does actually share some of his views on education reform. So he said that if there's an idea that he agrees with, he's not going to go with the political angle. He's going to support it and speak his mind.
Now, you also got a chance to ask one-on-one Governor Bush, what does he think about all these people just clamoring to always hear what he has to say?
That's right. I mean, I did speak to him briefly on his take on why he's still in demand as a speaker.
Because I've been committed to this. This isn't a new fandangled thing. I've been involved prior to being governor and as governor and then continued on. So I have some credibility perhaps in that regard. And I'm a former. So I don't have to feel I'm not good at spinning. I say what I think, and everything's not politically motivated anymore for me, so that may help as well.
One of the issues which Jeb Bush has been asked to weigh in on in recent times is what his opinion is on who should be selected for Mitt Romney's running mate. Mitt Romney, the presidential hopeful from the Republican camp, and of course, Jeb Bush said that Mitt Romney is vetting some talented and able candidates, his pick would be Marco Rubio, another Florida native.
That's 90.7's Matthew Petty reporting on his experience chasing down Governor Jeb Bush when he was speaking in Orlando this week. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Mark, you're welcome.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.